Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the Inside Linebacker Countdown, joined here by Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how you doing?
I'm still doing real well, Ken. Thank you.
Kind of left everybody hanging on the edge of their seat with we've gone through 10 through 8, and then your number 7 picks. We'll come back with my number 7. But we also had a trivia question in the first part, which was, what player had the position of stud when he was drafted by the Ravens in college? And you probably tell that's a defensive position as opposed to an offensive position.
Yes, but I don't know the answer. So I'm going to surprise you with my not knowing there.
All right. But Kamilai Correa is the guy who obviously a draft pick that didn't really work out for the Ravens. Dean Pease liked him enough to trade, I think, a 6th round pick for the Ravens to get him and keep him with him in Tennessee. But it was a kind of a disappointing 2nd round pick for the Ravens. That my brush with Kamilai Correa was when I was giving my defensive analysis week after week. I did have some critical comments about Kamilai, and Kamilai Correa's mom came after me in the comments to my article and was saying, "Oh no, he's playing out of position. You know, he dominates as an outside linebacker. He's being forced to play off ball." And this is nice to have an advocate like that in your family.
You know what, though, Ken? This is long before we knew each other, and I watched that whole thing. It got that much attention. So I went on the message board and saw all that stuff. Sure enough. But, yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah.
Well, good for her and good for him in terms of being that. It's not the only time that I've gotten myself into trouble with a Ravens player. The other one was apparently – Dwan Edwards had some things to say to the RSR ownership in terms of what I was saying about him online. They became a pretty good player.
That's what I'm going to say, Ken. Jeez, yeah. be nice well, to Dwan. That's yeah. a
at that time he was not a good player. This was about 2007, and it was in his 4th season. It really hadn't done anything for the Ravens. So anyway, it is what it is. We'd encourage people to go back and listen to that first episode, by the way. Some great stuff from Jason on there. Really interesting differences of opinion, in my opinion, at the bottom of the list, as has been the case with a lot of these shows. We also talked a lot about what the Ravens really need, and we've got a little bit of difference there. I think that Jason is a little bit more focused on getting some good pass defending inside linebackers, which is always of value. I kind of think they need some injury insurance also as a 2-down Mike for Roquan. And you probably have a guy who can play Mike or Will if you have a 2-down thumper Mike. But it's a lot easier to replace that Will on 3rd down with a dime back. So if anything were to happen to Roquan, I presume would happen is that there'd be the green dot would go to Hamilton. The 2-down Mike role would go to another player, whether it's a veteran or a rookie of the Ravens draft this year. The 3rd down play would probably go to Simpson initially to stay on the field and move over a slot, which would be dangerous because a little bit different responsibilities. And then Simpson would have, we hope, 3 down responsibilities on the Will side, but perhaps, replaced on that side by a dime back when he slides over to Mike on 3rd down. So I think do you want to talk about your reasons why you think
just really quickly. I think that, I will say if Roquan goes down, man, that's going to be a tough one, but I would say in this draft in particular, there are a lot of guys who surprisingly profile very good in coverage, causing those who are good in coverage to fall later than they would in other drafts, providing that value. So Trenton Simpson is still unproven, in coverage everywhere, but especially in coverage. So I'm looking at a plethora of guys who can cover and handle zone duties, and that's kind of where I put my list too. obviously the guys that can do both are great, but we went over some guys in that first episode I thought was great, Ken. There were actually like Mike linebackers that would make a good Will, and of course your Will linebackers weren't physical enough to handle Mike. So the last show was really good as far as the stylistic differences in between the linebackers.
All right, let's move on and talk about my number seven guy. And your number seven guy was James Williams, right, of Miami?
Yes.
And a guy who is certainly not known, but has played a lot of safety and pre-safety at Miami, but it has played some other things too. It's kind of a joker position. That's how we came up with the stud question. But mine is Cedric Gray of North Carolina. And I have a sixth or seventh round grade on him. He won't be 22 until October. That's the biggest positive he's got on his resume here. But he's 6'2", 234, 32 and a half inch arms are fine, 464 on the 40 is okay. 17 bench is not okay, especially for 32 and a half inch arms and being a linebacker. That's not very good. He kind of took a step back in 23 after he had a really fine 22 season. 13.5% missed tackle rate in his career. 143 stops and 57 missed tackles would be, as I've talked about that stat being kind of like the strikeout to walk ratio for inside linebackers. You want to have a lot more stops than you have missed tackles. His is only 2.5 to 1 in his career, which is pretty yucky. Also had kind of lots of his tackles were falling backward, which means I think he's playing a little too high, is how I would look at it. Had some trouble bringing down Mayer of Notre Dame. That's something a lot of people had trouble with. I'm not blaming him for that, but the bigger the player, the more trouble he's had in terms of bringing him down. Coverage numbers were really good though. 5.0 yards per target, a 79 passer rating allowed. It's like the fact that he's picked on all the time. So he had 49 targets, and that's in 23, I believe 23. And only a 79 passer rating allowed with 5.0 yards per target. There aren't very many linebackers who get targeted 30 times in a whole season, but he gets targeted a lot, and he held up very well in that regard. Kind of reminds me of Brandon Stevens at the beginning of this last year. He was targeted all the time, most targeted guy in the entire NFL at corner, and he held up very well in the early part of the season. Actually, it didn't play quite as well in the later part. He's a Will in the NFL. Absolutely. He's played some Mike at North Carolina, and possible three down player. So if you're looking for a guy who would stay on the field, I think that's possible. I think it's also possible if you don't like his coverage, you can replace him with a dime. Betting on him in my case and having as high as I do is a bet on his age and future development primarily. It's not exactly what the Ravens need in terms of being a two-down Mike linebacker, certainly. But I'm looking at a lot of kind of limited players at this point. And I thought Cedric Gray was a guy I would bet on his upside more than some of the other guys. For instance, like Barrett of Michigan that I had below him.
Okay, so we have some disagreements on this one. I actually have him. Was this your number six or seven guy?
Seven guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's my number four guy.
Wow.
And I noticed in the combine, it caught my attention when Jeremiah said he's day two all day long. 100 plus tackles in 3 straight years. So when I sat down to look at him, I noticed that his instincts to slip blocks stood out. His sideline to sideline, and it's really more about his instincts than his play speed. He's a 4.64, and I kind of question his long speed, but he's a quicker than fast guy. It's his eyes, his play recognition, his response in zone coverage that I really, really love. He's a coverage guy, just like we were talking about at the top of the draft or at the top that you were talking about at the top of the show. He's a natural in coverage. He racks up tackles constantly around the ball. I would say his when you're talking about his tackling, I think his play strength is average. And it may get a little better, but he's already 6'1", 234. Which is pretty filled out for a guy who's 6'1", 234 pounds. You know, some longer arms compared to a lot of middle linebackers, 32 and a half inches. So he's got decent, you know, tackling range. I really like him. I think that, you know, play strength is what I question. I don't think that's going to get any better. He'll probably be a guy that has to brace himself for contact and take the worst of contact on a lot of runners. But his play recognition – and you were talking about why he was like picked on so much. I noticed a lot of crossing concepts in the games that I watched. I'll try to see if I can find the games, but it was at least three of them. A lot of crossers, which is like your Mike McDaniel style offense of Miami. So he has a lot of like, I noticed a lot of modern type concepts, crossers, slants, and that kind of thing. And at 22 years old, I thought that he was excellent in picking that stuff up. So yeah, I got him at number four. I got him all the way up at number four, number 79 on my board. So if he slipped to, say, that second pick of the fourth round, I would probably take him.
Second pick of the fourth round. Okay. Yeah. That's significant value.
And when I say 79, keep in mind that I have 106 players that I'm targeting. So, you know, my big board, as you know, Ken, is much bigger than that. But those guys that I consider like draft, you know, day three value types, there's 100 and higher. Day three value and better. There was 106 of them this year. So Cedric Gray is on that list for me at number 79.
Where did you have Leah Fowle on your big board?
At 119, like at the high end of the draftable.
Okay.
So that's where like these last chunk of guys, there's a guy that is my number seven that we haven't gotten to, but between him and Leah Fowle, that's 93 to 119. So that's when I'm looking at that fifth round, or maybe one of those guys slips to the seventh round where we have a pick, where I'd be looking to pounce. But Gray, he'd be somebody that I might even take a look at in the fourth, but I you know, out of 79 players, chances are one of those 78 is going to be there in round four. You know how that goes, Ken. There's probably going to be a handful of guys I got ahead of them. And, you know, inside linebacker isn't a priority for us. So, you know, realistically, I would say fifth round.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so I'll be really interested to see now where Cedric Gray goes. I think he will be drafted because of his youth, but I think his physical limitations are probably going to make him a day three pick, almost certainly. I know I hear what Daniel Jeremiah is saying, and I'm just not buying it. I just don't think there's too many people that will look at that and say, we got to get a position with a more traitsy-based player on day two with our last pick. I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah, write that down because I'm interested in it too. And I decided when I was watching the coverage to put a different font on what Daniel Jeremiah said or the reporters or any kind of like information I got off the TV screen, like the 100-plus tackles in three straight years, that kind of thing. So that's not coming from me. I know it's not coming from me. I wanted to like get that perspective in there. But yeah, day two all day long is what he said.
Very cool. Okay. All right, well, let's move on. We did actually do your number seven guy already. It's in the first show. Please go back and look into it because it's a special player, James Williams. So I think we're up to your number six guy.
Yes, and my number six guy is somebody you said, and Trevin Wallace. I kind of equated him to the college version of early Patrick Queen is what I saw from him.
I liked him at number 10. I didn't love him in the same manner, but I'd take him as a seventh-round pick probably for the Ravens. Certainly as a UDFA if they could get him there. And he might last, he might not. Okay, we'll move on to my number six guy then, who is Tommy Eichenberg of Ohio State. Would not be surprised if I'd be a little surprised if you didn't have him at all on your list at this point. But 6'2", 233, 31 and 5/8 inch arms. Good lateral movement with a 424 shuttle. 25 bench reps. By the way, weren't a lot of inside linebackers brave enough to bench. But he's turned 23. Showing his grown man strength in a way that I like. A little bit slower on the 40 than most of the other guys we have on the list at 469. And that is a dreaded other 40. So
that's a pro day, right? Yeah, that was a pro day.
Well, no, it was a pro day because normally the site I look at, which is the Draft Buzz or the Draft Scout, I'm going to look at which is. It's NFL Draft Buzz, if I want to get the most broad things. It's very good about labeling whether something came from a pro day, a combine or an other, and this was an other. So I don't know. Maybe it was, you know, I don't know if they do any measurements at Shrine Bowl or Senior Bowl or whatever it might have been, but it was an interesting one. And I look at it with a jaundiced eye if it's anything but a combine measurement. But there may be others that I should take more seriously.
It said no run right hamstring on his pro day.
On his pro day, okay.
Yeah, so I don't know where that number came from, but he did bench press the 20 times of his pro day. And he ran his three cone at 7:02 on the pro day.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad for an inside linebacker.
Yep.
One of the things that I said, I mean, he's turned 23 already, but he's still probably a player who can grow into his frame and carry more weight than 233 pounds. We'll see about that, but he definitely looks like a guy who could be a little bit bigger than he is because he's got a large frame. Took a step back in 23 after a fine fourth year at Ohio State in 22, where he had a 5.2-1 stops to missed tackle rate. That's 68 stops at 50. And 13 missed tackles. That's exceptional. It's very good. There's only a couple guys in the class who are that good. They didn't repeat it. He had a good missed tackle rate of 8.7%, but he was not nearly as good as a playmaker with only 31 stops in 23. He's been an effective block shedder to date, but I would really question with his length if he's going to be able to continue doing that at the NFL level. But he diagnoses, and he's a legitimate downhill player who moves to the football fairly well. Not an effective pass rusher, but he gets some pressures. I would say most of his pressures come after the pocket breaks. It's not like he has a couple sacks. He's had other pressures. Actually, one sack, I guess, this last year. But he had this will take me a minute to explain, but let me do it anyway. Because people look at PFF and they look at pressures. Got to be very careful with inside linebackers. And the major role that inside linebackers have is when they are off ball and they're spying or they have a short zone that they're covering as a pass play is occurring, the responsibility of the boot side inside linebacker is to immediately run right at the quarterback as soon as the pocket is broken. It is almost universal in all systems. When they do that, it's a very good chance for a pressure, as PFF defines it, because they have no limit on the time of pressure. You can get a late pressure and get credit for that. They won't give a late pressure in a lineman in that situation, but they will give the pressure a late pursuit pressure to linebackers. And they pick up a lot of cheap ones like that. So you want to watch for players who have a high number and really kind of look at it with a jaundiced eye, and it actually requires you to go back to the tape often to look at their hurries. And really see, did they get a lot of those when they broke the pocket and that? But he was effective at getting after the quarterback and causing some pressures at that point. But because that's some of his pressures, it doesn't reflect well on him as a pass rusher overall. Was not effective in coverage this last year, 8.6 yards per target, only 3 coverage stops in 24 targets, which is a terrible ratio. So that's the major drawback of Tommy Eichenberg. Now, why did I move him up? I moved him up because I thought he could play 2-down football for the Ravens. I looked at a cut-up of the Notre Dame game from 22, so I didn't look at a 23 season cut-up from him. His 23 game, by the way, versus Notre Dame was absolutely terrible. He looked just miserable in that game. But his 22 game versus Notre Dame was quite good. He had a couple sacks, one of those occurring on a pocket break, as I'm talking about, where he pushed Buckner out of bounds. Be a very interesting day 3 choice for the Ravens. I think that's where he belongs. He might be picked by somebody else earlier for sure. And I think if Roquan is hurt or Simpson proves ineffective as a 2-down player, I think he could be your guy. And if I were the Ravens, I think he drops into the value range in round 5 for me.
Okay. So I've seen him as high as like linebacker 5 on people's lists. Mm-hmm. To me, he's linebacker 11. And yeah. I guess a lot of that comes down to what we're looking for. Despite all those snaps that he had at Mike, 2.5 TFLs last year. He also hurt his elbow, so he missed a few games. And despite all those, you're talking about beautiful description of an inside linebacker's job. When that pocket breaks on the boot, you charge that quarterback and force it to get out of his hands. 0 passes defense. So he didn't even get his hand on any of those passes. I think he's well below average in coverage. And it's athletic limitations, I think, because he's a smart player, Ken. You can see it in his block shedding, block avoiding, just the way he plays the game and racks up tackles. But to me, like, number one, he's not a good enough athlete for anything else other than like Mike. I don't think run and chase, he's got like that tackle assist guy written all over him. Mm-hmm. Not a solo tackler, but racking up more assists than he does solo tackles. Really tight athlete for a linebacker. He moved more like an athletic defensive lineman to me. And, you know, running backs in any kind of space, I think, would be tough. The thing that stinks, why I would love to have him higher, is because his instincts are are very good. They're Mike good, is what I said. He's got Mike instincts. And he does show some closing bursts, but his coverage, I thought, was well below average. And body control, lateral movements. Like, I worry about him adjusting, taking a step further into the NFL game, where he'll go from looking like an average college athlete to a well below average NFL athlete. Not in the 40 time, but in the body movements and being able to quick side to side cuts and lateral movements. So I'm admittedly lower on him than consensus. So this is just not that any of this isn't anything else but our opinion, but I realize some people out there, Ohio State fans, are going to love him because that's their Mike linebacker. I just think for a fit on the Raven, again, I'm looking for somebody who can cover. So if we're going to have an opening there with Roquan, somebody that can stay on the field for three downs, and I don't think it's him.
So did you have Steel Chambers towards the bottom of your list?
Yeah, I had Steel at number 9 and him at number, and Eichenberg at 11.
Okay, so I had it just reversed with Eichenberg at 6 and Steel at, I think I would say 14 by the order I've got on this page, although he's outside my honorable mention list, actually. Mm-hmm. So interesting. Okay, so we're down to your number 5 guy.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm missing somebody from your list now. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes.
Well, we still have Leah Fowl, who we already did from your list.
Okay, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Because I think I'm like, all right, who's Ken got up here? Because now we're running out of spots. My number 5 guy, Ken, we're old, and it's Jeremiah Trotter Jr. out of Clemson, 22-year-old. Instinctive, outstanding eyes. I enjoy watching his instincts in every facet. He's got 4 career interceptions, 2 of them pick 6. A little bit like Eichenberg, change of direction is where he struggles, but not to the level of where I think Eichenberg is. He also, you mentioned at the top of the first show, guys who overrun plays. Like, I don't think his start is bad, but I've seen him, like, his stop is bad. So if he's full speed chasing and the running back cuts back, I noticed it takes him an extra step or so to be able to stop his feet. So some athletic limitations to Trotter, but instinctive in all phases versus the run, versus the pass. You can tell he was very well coached by his dad and others. You can tell he went to those good football schools probably growing up, the private, nice, rich kid schools and stuff like that. Jeremiah Trotter is a well-schooled athlete. So, and of course, he's got the blue blood. So he's going to make my list. I mentioned there's 106 players, Ken, that I'm putting targets on. He was number 93. So again, towards the end of that list. So we're looking again at that, you know, 5th round. You want an experienced high floor player as your backup linebacker. He could play Mike for you. He could play Will for you. He could do it all, just not at a high level. That's kind of where I'm sitting on Trotter.
All right, very good. I've got a few things to say about him also. I've got him at number 4, first of all. I think still a 5th-round player of the Ravens, so I think we're right on the money in terms of the that where he becomes a value to the Ravens there. While I'm going through my thing, I want people to think about what was Jeremiah Trotter Sr.'s nickname when he was playing. It's one of the all-time great nicknames. And he played 12 NFL seasons, 4 Pro Bowls, and 1 All-Pro. He was actually All-Pro with Ray Lewis in 2000. So he was the same year, you know, Jeremiah Trotter.
I know I'm going to know this, Ken. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I know I'm going to know this, and it's bugging me now. So
let it bug you a little longer, and so that people who are listening have a chance to think about it, too.
All right.
Size limitations for Trotter, again, very big. I think he's a will all the way. At the next level. I think he's a chase player, and I think he can really help you in that regard. He's almost like a tweener, inside linebacker, strong safety. He wouldn't really do well at strong safety, I don't think, but he's almost, size-wise, he's almost there. 16.3% missed tackle rate, 37 stops and 15 misses is not a good ratio of 2.5 to 1. 8.3 yards per target in coverage is not what you want, but he did have 2 interceptions, and he was not picked on despite a lousy rate. So it can be a case where sometimes where a high yards per target is based on a relatively small number of total snaps, and you you give up a couple of big plays and it looks bad. But the fact that he wasn't picked on a lot despite that is a good sign. And the fact that he, you know, made some plays to get some yardage back and get the football back is really nice as well. I think he was miscast as the Mike at Clemson. Mm-hmm. He had good understanding, good communication, but the guy's a lifer in football. And the guys, I really love a lot of the guys in this draft who come from family bloodlines.
Right.
Yeah. So we got Ellis on the defensive line, and you got some other players too, but the bloodline guys, I really appreciate them, but I think Clemson probably asked him to do more because of how much he understood the game of football coming there.
Man, couldn't agree more. Like he's built for a Will and barely built for a Will. Mm-hmm. But what I was saying, he could fill in for Mike if he needed him, is because he's just that darn smart, aggressive. If he needs to take one for the team and get bodied up by a guard, but he's going to throw himself into the running lane just to set other people up. Like, he's a really smart player. You know, you don't get two pick sixes usually unless you have those instincts. So I think you said it beautifully. Like, he's not built for Mike. He's built for Will, barely. But I do think that, you know, he could hold his own to not embarrass you, you know, if you needed him to hang in there for a couple of games, because he's just so damn smart.
Got him high as well. So I even have a spot higher than you do at number four. So I guess we'll move on. Actually, my number five guy we've already been through, that's Marist Liufau of Notre Dame. So now we're down to your number four guy, who we might have had already too.
We did. It was Cedric Gray. So I had Gray and Trotter very, very close.
Well, this is why the second shows tend to go quicker. It's a lot of the same flicks.
Okay.
We've been through a lot of this, and so that's why I usually cut it off in the middle of number seven now after learning.
I gotcha. I gotcha, Ken. See, you're coachable.
You know, it's interesting. There's the ultimate uncoachable player. The last episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming up, but it's supposed to be how Larry never learned a lesson in his entire life, which is great idea for us.
I wouldn't say that was coachable. I'd say that's good self-scouting, Ken. That's self-scouting.
All right, very good. So let's move on. You're number three guy.
Okay, so these guys right here, I don't think there's any chance of the Ravens getting.
Yep.
Just because somebody's going to want a linebacker, have a bigger need for a linebacker. I still graded them as I normally would. So they're, you know, they're faded to the very long back as I could on our list, on the list of their grades. But my number three is Peyton Wilson from NC State. Look, he's 6'4", 233, runs a 4.43. It's not perfect. There's health concerns. His career, the reason he's 24, his career was delayed by injuries, including one knee surgery. But look, he makes plays on the ball. Ex-high school wrestler I had from the combine. Best speed in the draft. Excellent hustle. Ken, his last snap looks like his first stat. You're talking about endurance. His man coverage is excellent. Of course, there's things that you can pick on. He's going to be a Will. He's a short-arm guy, fast guy. So he profiles as your Will, a guy that's freed up to, you know, make your tackles for losses. Use him in the way you use Patrick Queen. You know, take your losses sometimes in the when he's, you know, bouncing off a guy sometimes and, you know, having his losses. But overall, an excellent athlete, you know, 4.43 linebacker. I think some team's going to draft him maybe as high as the second round, maybe probably the third round, and it won't be us.
Okay. My number one guy, Peyton Wilson.
Okay.
I think he's the best linebacker in this draft, and you hit on some of the reasons already in terms of the athleticism. He's by far the biggest frame of anybody in the draft, a lot like Jack Campbell was last year, but with more speed at 4.43. Solid jumps. He did not bench, and he'll turn 24 in April, which is the big problem. He's actually had two ACLs. He had an ACL in high school and one in college. It doesn't get much more flaggy than that in terms of redness. So that's bad. But here's the ultimate stat for him. In 2023, he had 67 stops, run and pass, and only six missed tackles. That's 11.2-1, by far the highest in the group. So he makes plays.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
He doesn't miss tackles. Again, that's the statistic I'm leaning on a lot in terms of some evaluation.
And Ken, just to interrupt you, but he's doing that at 30 and a half inch arms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you talk about a tough guy, and that's where the high school wrestler comment really made sense to me. Like, this guy's got good use of strength and body control to where he's used to physical contact. You can tell. And the discipline and the endurance to where a lot of guys get tired, Ken. You know what I mean? They'll miss a tired tackle, not for lack of effort. They're just worn out. This guy's an energizer, buddy. So I apologize to interrupt, but I just wanted to put an exclamation point on that point for you.
Kelly Gregg, wonderful job with shorter arms and a lot of physical limitations. And he could make up for some of it by the fact he's a little shorter, could get leveraged that way with lower pad level as a pro player. But basically, he had to be a great hand fighter and use his wrestling background to be as productive a tackler as he was at the NFL level. He's one of the really enormous outliers to that. In the case of an inside linebacker, while arms are important for block shedding, and there was some things I observed on tape that were not great about block shedding from Wilson, I think he's still near the top of the class in terms of his ability to get to the spot and make a tackle. And what really shows up is you don't get 67 stops anymore. Most of the guys were talking about a ratio of, you know, like 30 to 11 or, you know, 40 to 12 is one of the pretty good ones. And, you know, other guys that were, you know, 40 to or 35 to 9, and kind of, he's got 67 stops. That's an unbelievable number of plays that he's made to either get somebody down, knock a ball down, sack somebody, whatever it is. And it's just, that's a high number. And then the missed tackle rate is, I think, tied for the second lowest in the entire draft. He might've been actually technically third. That's what I've got here, but very good. Not exceptional in terms of pass rushing success. 22 pressure events on 151 pass rush snaps. Did finish a lot with 13 sacks and quarterback hits among the 22 pressures. The reason, by the way, that's happening is because he's a very solid coverage player, and that's where NC State needed him. So, again, they're not rushing him. They're not even, you know, they do play some zone, but they let him play man a fair amount. And so I did see that in the game I watched versus UConn. That he was actually beaten on a wheel route by the running back one time. But a good coverage player. Coverage targeted 37 times on 309 snaps, allowed 6.0 yards per target. But get this, the opposing passer rating was 47.2. Zero touchdowns, three interceptions on the season. So he did it all in terms of making run tackles and making plays in coverage. His worst game of the year was against Notre Dame in week two, where he had three missed tackles. He only had two the remainder of the season. We watched that game, but I did not look at Peyton Wilson as there's the prospect that's going to be at the top of the inside linebacker board. And if I had, I probably would have been disappointed and probably very skeptical about what happened to him the rest of the year because he was so good. The week one game against UConn, though, is the cutup I watched. It wasn't particularly a good game, but it was good for some reasons to look at. First of all, UConn had Christian Haynes in there at guard who faced him a couple of times, and he did have some trouble. Guards got on him a little bit. He got beaten on that wheel route. He overran a tackle on a screen pass. And then he does some mystical things where he's just in the backfield at the right place, and there was a fumble on an exchange, and before he even hit the ground, he picked it up and was running the other direction with it. And it's one of these, where the hell did he come from plays that you just see once in a while. And the ball was carelessly handled, but he made a big play on it, and that was kind of nice to see. I thought, generally speaking, was fooled by misdirection in one play in that game. I probably was, you know, what wasn't his best game of the year by any stretch, but it seemed to make his tackles a little high is one of the kind of problems I have about him. Now, didn't miss a lot of tackles, so that's okay, but I wonder if he adjusted as the season went on, because he missed three tackles the next week against Notre Dame and only had two missed tackles the whole rest of the season. So I wonder if there were adjustments that he went through. And I did not really see tape that would tell me one way or the other on that. I think he's the first linebacker taken. I think he probably goes in the 20s. And I think if you go back in this draft and it's 2019 again, when the two Devons got taken, you remember that? 5 and 10?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, white and blue.
And that was the absolute apex of overvaluation of inside linebacker play, over inside linebacker value. And then the Ravens next year, you know, we're in a big struggle to get Queen at 28 with Jordan Brooks taken. And others. Both Devons really didn't work out for where they were picked. They were both quite poor selections for where they were picked. Bush did not, they didn't even pick up a fifth-year option. They traded a first-round pick from the following year to move up to get him. So to me, I think he would have been picked probably 12, 15 if he were in that draft. There wouldn't even been a question about it, but I think he still gets picked in the 20s. And the Ravens won't get him, but I think he still could affect the Ravens draft board, because if he's drafted in the 20s, it's probably good for the Ravens, because the second linebacker could even start to draw interest in terms of the Ravens pick at 30. Or if he's not picked by 30, he could be a guy that other teams say, we got to have him now before somebody else gets him. They want to move up to that spot. So I'm excited to see how that plays out. Ravens, they won't take him no matter what. Even if he was on the board at 30, they won't take him. But I think there's a chance that he impacts who the Ravens draft.
Wow. Okay. So, Ken, you should take if you think he's going to go in the 20s, there's a business making proposition in there, because there are 21 other players with plus odds, meaning underdogs to get drafted in the first round ahead of him. So there's 21 players with plus odds.
What's the number on him to be drafted in the first round? Do you have that?
Plus 800.
To be drafted in the first round at all?
Yes. So he's a second round guy. Like my number one guy is at plus 230, just to give you an example. So but yeah, he's you could make a big killing on that if you think he's going to go in the first.
Probably should look at wagering markets more, because the information there, because there's money involved, tends to be a lot better in terms of projecting the likelihood of where players draft. They'd still miss on most of the Raiders picks over the years, but they tend to be, when people are betting on things, that's usually a very good indicator of what people think the odds are on a dollar weighted basis, not on a count of idiots basis, on a dollar weighted basis. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I have him number 49 on my board, so I think very highly of him in the next two guys on my list. I don't have much negative to say on him. It's just, I think you alluded to it, there's some head scratching events that happen with him, run bys, and you know, but then he'll make up for it. He'll make up for it with just these outstanding effort plays, just pure speed. It wouldn't surprise me if he's the first linebacker off the board, or maybe second linebacker off the board. I happen to have it number three, and that's just my infatuation. I think, Ken, if this was the 2020 draft with Queen, Murray, Jordan Brooks, that these three guys that I have in the top three are better than those guys.
Yeah.
It just happens to be a stacked offensive line class, a stacked wide receiver class. You're going to have at least four, if not five or six quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So it's just a top heavy class in the top, I'd say 45 to 50, in my opinion, I think are as good as they've been in recent years. But this is an excellent football player in Peyton Wilson.
Okay. Well, I'll be interested to see then where my number three guy is on your one or two, because I'm sure he is. So my number three guy is Junior Colson of Michigan. 6'2", 238, 32 and a half inch arms, and he won't be 22 until December. Where'd you have it?
He's at number two, and I've seen him as I start poking my head around and looking at others' rankings as their number one guy. So I have one guy ahead of him, but how I would describe Junior Colson is the modern day Mike. So okay, in our day, Ken, and not in our son's age, you know, or little brother's age, your modern Mike was the baddest man on the field, like a Roquan is now. He's a throwback. Now it's kind of hard to find those guys who are butt kickers but can still stay on the coverage and hang with the passing league. Junior Colson to me is a modern day Mike. Okay, so he's not a throwback like Roquan, but he's a bad man compared to the linebackers that are coming out. Played through a broken hand, very smooth and well-rounded player, I think. Smoothest or the strongest part of his game is his advanced coverage chops. And my main thing with him, like bugaboo, is him getting stuck on blocks. Okay, so if you want to say what's he good at and what's he not good at, I would say coverage, extremely good. Getting stuck on blocks, needs improvement. But overall, anything you want to look at as far as the games I watched, consistent. And he did it with a broken hand. I really like him. I have him and Peyton Wilson together, 48 and 49 on my board. So it's like dealer's choice, take your pick. No difference between them. I like them both. It just depends what you would want in the linebacker there. But I really like the kid from Michigan, man. Junior Colson, also 2 years younger than Peyton Wilson. Or he's going to turn 22 this year. Peyton Wilson, 24 this year.
Yep. I got a few more comments about Colson. And I liked him a lot. I think you're right on the money about being a better coverage player. 5.1 yards per target allowed. Did not allow any play over 21 yards on 36 targets the whole year. 90.6 passer rating against is just fine. All that generally means is he really didn't have interceptions to throw in there. Recognition on pass plays, particularly going downhill, is excellent. He does not lose track of the running back. Really like to see that. Really like to see a guy who triggers quickly on that running back when there's a screen or an outlet. Like many inside linebacker in this class, I would say he looks good as a trail player. And he's better than most because he doesn't tend to overrun the play. I thought he did a better job of denying cutbacks, particularly when unblocked. And you know, oftentimes he'd be a scraping player along the line of scrimmage, or he might even be in the backfield on the back end of the play. It's just he's very good about maintaining discipline on the backside relative to some of the other linebackers who tend to overrun the play in this class. Mm-hmm. Did some cleanup for Michael Barrett, but I think they probably both benefited, but I think Barrett benefited more from playing next to the other. So Barrett obviously a good player in his own right, but Colson is just better. Benefited from a high level in general of trust in his teammates. The Michigan defensive coordinator, whose name I'm forgetting, blanking on right now, who went to the Chargers, right?
He's the one that took over as the head coach.
Did he go to the head coach at Michigan, or
I don't know. Maybe we got him confused. So okay. I'll retract my statement.
Minter, that's the guy. So, okay. I know some of the analytics guys who work with the Michigan football team, and they worked with McDonald before they worked with Minter. And they say Minter is better. Incredible praise. Incredible wow. praise. So it almost seems like McDonald's obviously with the Seahawks, but if McDonald wants to run the defense there, he might not want Minter there, or he might want Minter there. I don't know, but he certainly I think knows who he is. I think they had a overlapping tenure there, and he was bumped up. But the analytics guys praising him in that way is very impressive to me, given what McDonald did in Baltimore.
Absolutely. So yeah, Colson though sounds like you'd like him as well. Number one guy or number where was he on your list?
He's my number three guy. So that's
number
why
three doing, guy. Okay. So, yeah. So we got the same top three here. Looks like
we have only been one player left to discuss. Why don't you lead it off?
Sure. Now see, Ken, this is the guy I would go to bat for, because to me, if you watch his game against Alabama, Edgerrin Cooper, Texas A&M, he is 23. You watch his Alabama game, man. That Great is game. A showcase. I mean, it's hit power, it's speed, it's disguising blitzes, it's everything you would expect a Ravens linebacker to look like, be asked to do. 4.51, which obviously is a really good time, but he's instinctual, so he plays even faster than this. 34-inch arms. He's 6'2", 230. So, you know, you talked about the power of Colson, 6'2", 230, 238. Edgerrin Cooper, same type of body, 6'2", 230. Peyton Wilson, 6'4", 233. Like all these guys, it's like if you're between 6'1 and 6'3 and weigh about 230 pounds, that's the prototype. It's amazing how they're like so cookie cutter nowadays. But Edgerrin Cooper's my number one, Ken. Look, I would just say this. If you're looking for somebody who could create, he's going to go and he's going to be somebody's number one linebacker. But if the Ravens were tempted to pick him, I wouldn't suggest it. It wouldn't be my point. But if he was there in round two and we picked him, it's because we're trying to recreate that Patrick Queen, Roquan type of magic. To me, he's got that kind of skill, to be a true three down, like a star linebacker in this league. That's how highly I think of him. So I'm a big fan of his. I realize not everybody is as high on him as me, but I can't get the Alabama game out of my head. It's just a complete effort.
Let's talk about that Alabama cutoff for a moment, because it's the most impressive single cutoff I've seen of any player at any position this offseason, doing all my draft content stuff. And I try and watch one for every single player that I have on my list somewhere. And Cooper's game versus Alabama, if it was in a star treatment of my defensive article for folks that know there. That
really? Okay.
Yeah. Would have been 15, 16, 17 plays. I mean, I was going through it. I wrote them all down here. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. I've got 15 individual plays highlighted. Some of them are negative, but most of them are positive. And the last one I have is probably would have 15 to 18 notes in star treatment had I been doing it for the Ravens defensive review. So just a very impressive single game. What's really impressive about it is he's acting on a lot of that game as a spy for the QB for Alabama, Jalen Milroe. And Milroe is a dual threat who really honestly is not that much of a run threat. He had 3.3 yards per carry this year, but he's a guy who's elusive in the pocket, moves around a lot, and you need somebody who you can trust to contain to even allow your pass rush to go after Milroe. And he did a great job of that. He had some problems where he got picked up by a running back in a blitz, got caught in the wash. Things happened to him, of course. He had a sack, force fumble, and a blindside sack. I think he had 3 sacks in this game. Yeah, he finished a sack on a flush left by number 25. Don't know who that is, but where he was spying the play. And his third sack was on a pocket break. So it wouldn't even count it as a pass rusher on that play by me, but he took him down outside of the pocket for a sack. So that's wonderful. Again, that's another reason why you can't really trust inside linebacker pressure rates for what they are, but outstanding. The size and athleticism combination, by far the best in this draft. The only one who's really close, and he's got 34-inch arms, and the reason I put him a little bit ahead of Peyton Wilson in this case is because of the arm length there. Wilson is even faster after 2 ACL surgeries than Cooper is, which is truly remarkable.
So, Ken, I want to challenge you here for a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Like, especially with Peyton Wilson's injuries.
Yep.
Like, why would you have him number one? Why would you have him at a Cooper, period? Because, like, I don't know. Like, to me, you're saying everything I'm agreeing with you. Like, where's the negatives? What's the other side? I'm curious.
It's a lot of it's like how great Peyton Wilson was at getting other players on the ground or otherwise ending plays. He had 67 stops and 6 missed tackles. Edgerrin Cooper was terrific. He had 56 stops and 11 missed tackles, which is about the third best ratio. And it's about 5.1. I think there's one other guy at 5.2. I don't think anybody else is anywhere between 5.2 and 11.2. That is what Wilson is. So it's that. That is what I'm excited. It's the playmaking of ability of Peyton Wilson. And by the way, the argument that I think would carry the most weight is that he's got red flags for injury. I think the counter to that I have is, and yet he ran a 4.43 after 2 ACLs. I mean, what the hell? You know, so
it's
So that's, I think that's it. I honestly think that there could be a run on inside linebackers in this draft and that Cooper could be in the discussion at the end of the first round, not for the Ravens, but that some other team after Wilson is gone might say, we really need to get Cooper. They don't have that much of a difference.
I think this is going to happen in the second round.
Okay.
We should be hoping for it. You know what I mean? At any point. But I don't think a guy like Cooper, a guy like Wilson, and I'm throwing Colson in there. Those three guys, I think, will be gone before pick 62. And I think, where was it, 62, right?
Yeah. 62, we're up.
62, and I think that's a great thing for the Ravens. You know, well, then, if we can get three inside linebackers and six quarterbacks maybe by then, that would be great.
I don't think there's any problem getting six quarterbacks by then. I think there's likely you get two inside linebackers by then. And I'm kind of split on whether two or three is perfect. If two are gone, because the third is left, you might get a premium for the pick. You know, particularly if number two goes at 61, I'd be real excited about that prospect, you know, in terms of the remaining guy carrying a premium at that point. But if you're looking for trade down, you want that. If you're looking for value at pick 62 itself, and you want to get a player like maybe Leggett of South Carolina, who would be he's kind of my intersection of need and value guy right now at pick 62. I don't know how you feel about him. Where's he on your board?
I like Leggett, man. I mean, obviously it's a stacked receiver class, but he is my wide receiver number 11. Mm-hmm. And even though that sounds low, that rank comes in at number 38 on my board. And as you know, Ken, that's not counting the quarterbacks. So I'm looking at, you know, if my board was perfect, which it's not, he would be like pick 42, 43, 44, something like that. So yeah,
and then there's other teams who will be inefficient about their draft pick.
Exactly. So, you know, your board's never going to look clean, no matter what, who you are, your board's going to be messy. But I'm thinking, Ken, that there's a stark difference between the three guys that we talked about. And then the guy I really liked more than you, Cedric Gray. I think I liked him a little bit better than you. He was my fourth linebacker. Mm-hmm. But the difference between the top three and then your next guy, I think, is so great that if two of them go, that third one, another team's going to be like, shoot, we better jump in and get whoever's left of these three or else we're SOL.
But doesn't that mean, I mean, from an economic standpoint, I'd say that forces them up even higher in terms of where they get selected. So they probably don't end up, even if big boards have them down at 62, if you really think that was an appropriate value for any of those three guys, then I think if there's only three of them, the scarcity factor, you know, comes into play.
Yeah, that's what my point in saying that was. I don't think we'd be in a position where one of them be there at 62. Mm-hmm. I think all this happens well before us in the second round, to where once Cooper or Colson goes, both of those goes, and Peyton Wilson's out there, you best believe somebody's going to jump on him. Or same thing if you change the names around.
All right, Jason, always a complete pleasure.
I loved it.
I think we went through actually our honorable mention players, because I think basically, well, now I got two guys I haven't named yet tonight. Now I got three guys on my honorable mention list I haven't named tonight. Let's talk real quickly on that. You got anybody else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll have the same guys, but I thought Curtis Jacobs of Penn State was
my number 11 guy.
Yeah, he's interesting. I'll just read my blurb and leave it at that. Feisty player who plays with the ownership that you like. Nice job as a quarterback spy versus Utah. His instincts for when to trigger are good. So a lot of those quarterback keepers and stuff like that. Ability to finish could dry up in the NFL. He's conscious of tackling his technique and can battle himself into position, but struggles too much to bring guy down for someone with his measurables. I wrote down it may be a quickness or reaction issue. Instincts are average at his best. I gave him a B in athleticism, a B plus in fundamentals, and a D in instincts. So that's kind of where I stand with him.
All right. I've got a few comments on Jalen Ford of Texas, but I'm not going to go through all of them. I'll just tell you he's another guy I would love for the Ravens to get as a UDFA. 6'2", 234, 32 and a half inches, 464. Not a good bench, but he did have a over 3-1 stops to missed tackle rate. And it was a lot of stops because he had a lot of missed tackles, which, by the way, if you're going to do it and your ratio is like 4 or 5 to 1, I'll take as many missed tackles as you want to have. If you could give me 5 stops for every missed tackle, I'll literally give me 5 times the normal missed tackles and make 5 times that number of stops. But he was actually very picked on in coverage with 9.0 yards per target on 45 targets, which is not good. I mean, Eichenberg was probably a little bit worse than him, but there weren't other players that I considered who were much worse.
A guy I considered, and he's a different type of player, it's for his closing and blitzing, was Jordan McGee out of Temple. He didn't make my list. He's 6'1", 228, Ken. So again, short, he doesn't have the body type, but he is really, really good at blitzing. Just all parts of it, the disguise, the timing. He is an aggressive player. He's a closer too. I would imagine that maybe his missed tackle rate would be high because he's balls to the wall all the time. So yeah, interesting player, Jordan McGee from Temple. Didn't make my list, but if you want yourself a blitzer, a specialty type player, he would fit the bill.
Traditional spelling, right? I do not know him.
McGee is actually M-A-G-E-E, no Mick. It's Maggie.
Maggie error card, if you know that one. That's from the
32-inch arms too, Ken, and 6'1", 228. So the guy brings some pain with him. He's short and stocky, you know what I mean, and nice long arms for his size. 32 inches for a 6'1 guy is long for that. But he's a downhill thumper type guy. Blitzer. I saw some flybys, so I'm imagining he's like, you know, a little out of control. Maybe his missed tackle rate would be high, but
16.5% career, but he had it down to 14.9% last year. And his stops are high though, 41 stops with 13 missed tackles. So it's not that that's a good ratio, but there's probably some cleanup that could be done there. And I don't have an age on him here that what I'm.
He's 23 this year, but yeah. Okay. So anyway, just an interesting player I thought to mention. He made my, you know, outside the board.
Okay, I'm a guy I'm not excited about that. I've watched a little bit of his J.D. Bertrand of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. UDFA, I'm fine with him, but I'm not particularly excited about him as a player. But I did want to mention.
I'm going to go back after this episode and look at Ulu Fashio, Not Afraid of War, because that's a guy that you had some nice things to say. And maybe I just caught the wrong couple of games. So I'm looking forward to that. There's plenty of Washington games out there. Almost get sick of watching Michigan versus Washington, Ken. Side note, nothing to do with the show. When you talked about best game overall and Edgerrin Cooper versus Alabama, Jordan Hicks, Washington State versus Washington, I thought he was the best player on the field with Adunze and Polk and Jalen McMillan and, you know, Fautano and Roger Rosengarten and Penix, that all-star team that Washington had on offense, and Jaden Hicks of Washington State. I fell in love with him. He's my positional favorite and somebody that if we were able to get, I'd be really excited about, just because I could see him and Kyle used in such a tandem that would just be, I mean, you got two just ball hawks out there. So Jaden Hicks stand club over here, Ken.
All right. Very good. Jason, always a pleasure to talk football. It's just so much fun going through this. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Sure. Yeah. Huddle It Up Films on YouTube and Twitter. Mentioned in the first show on YouTube, I have plenty of cut ups, play compilations that Ken will tell you it's no filler. It's no BS. It's just play after play, including offensive linemen and defensive players. So you want to take a look at Ben Cleveland, Fale Lele. I got plenty of tape on all of those, whether it be full games or their best plays. Josh Jones, newly added. Plenty of stuff to keep you busy. Please subscribe over there. I don't ask for any money or nothing like that, but if you want to show support, subscribe and like the videos, and then more people will get a chance to see them.
All right. Wonderful, Jason. At Huddle It Ups on at Huddle It Up Films on Twitter, so make sure you give him a follow. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter, wide open in terms of categories. Like Jason, I'd ask you to write a brief review if you want to do something to help the show. You're listening this late in the second part of this podcast. I know you appreciate the show. Take the time to write us 50 words, a 5-star review, and drive a little traffic towards the website and towards the podcast in general in terms of its listenership. That's always nice and appreciated.
And Ken, I every once in a while I get the urge to say this, so I apologize for messing up your ending, but Ken does a lot for people behind the scenes, never asks for any thanks, puts in more work into coverage content than anybody I know, is always looking for more ideas, always feels like he should be putting out more content. So Ken, you know, he's a very straightforward guy, doesn't take compliments well, but take it from me. He's one of the easiest, best, good-hearted guys. He's always asking me about my health problems that I don't talk about. Love Ken to death. I'll always be there for him. Please support him. Don't be afraid to DM him. Slide into his DMs with a show idea. Ken's easy to work with, and you'll love him.
I appreciate that, Jason. Thanks for saying so. And thanks for coming on the show, my friend.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.